From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. A twin-engine Antonov 148 passenger plane crashed shortly after takeoff from a Moscow airport Sunday, killing all 71 people on board. Russian Transport Minister Maxim Sokolov said the first task in the investigation is organizing the logistics. He emphasized it's too early to draw conclusions as to the cause of the crash. Todd Curtis of Airsafe.com said the evidence would suggest the aircraft broke apart before the crash.
What was shown was essentially fairly small pieces of wreckage widely scattered, which implies to me that since there's no central crash location with a lot of wreckage, that this aircraft very likely broke up in midair.
The plane, manufactured in 2010 and operated by Saratov Airlines, disappeared from radar moments after departing and lost altitude rapidly. The last major crash in Russia occurred Christmas Day 2016, when a plane operated by the Russian Defense Ministry crashed into the Black Sea, killing all 62 on board. In Arizona, three were killed, four injured Saturday when their tour helicopter crashed in the Grand Canyon. All six tourists were British. South African Deputy President and head of the African National Congress, Cyril Ramaphosa, Sunday told supporters in Cape Town the party's executive body will meet again Monday to finalize discussions on the future of embattled President Jacob Zuma.
We will continue to wage a relentless war against corruption and mismanagement of the resources of our country.
Mr. Zuma, who was replaced as party leader in December, has been dogged for years by corruption allegations and is being pressured to resign ahead of next year's election. Ramaphosa said Mr. Zuma had been in negotiations over his departure. This is VOA News. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Sunday said his country delivered severe blows to Iranian and Syrian forces, vowing to take further action after two separate airstrikes, after downing an Iranian drone over Israeli territory. The Israeli commander of the Northern Front, Major General Yoel Strick, said Iran wishes to create a front command in Syria whose aim is to hurt Israel. He vowed that would never happen. Trinity University history professor and Syrian analyst David Lesh said he was not surprised at the Israeli strikes.
This type of confrontation had been percolating for some time. Israel's been carrying out attacks, usually from Lebanese territory by air, against suspected Hezbollah, an Iranian, and even some Syrian targets.
One of the Israeli warplanes was shot down but crashed in northern Israel, and both crewmen were saved. One is injured. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson begins talks in the region with stops in Jordan, Turkey, Lebanon, Egypt, and Kuwait. A high-level North Korean delegation is back in North Korea after 3 days in South Korea for the opening ceremonies of the Winter Olympics. The sister of the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un met four times with South Korea's President Moon Jae-in and delivered a personal letter from her brother, holding out the hope of the possible summit in Pyongyang. Korean Society Senior Director Stephen Norper said the meetings and the offer should be treated seriously.
And it comes at a crucial time of regional tensions. So it's important to give our chief ally, meaning South Korea, the space to experiment with this inter-Korean relations aspect and see if they can't make progress. At the very least, it lessens tensions for a while.
U.S. Vice President Mike Pence, who was in South Korea for the opening ceremony, said there's no daylight between the U.S., South Korea, and Japan on the need to isolate the North economically and diplomatically until it abandons its nuclear and missile programs. 11 Western envoys Sunday urged the Kenyan opposition to recognize President Uhuru Kenyatta as the country's legitimately elected leader, just days after opposition leader Raila Odinga held a mock inauguration in which he was sworn in as the people's president. The government reacted by shutting down stations that covered the event and deporting a high-level opposition leader. In Venezuela, troops clashed with illegal miners, killing 18. The incident, reported Sunday, took place Saturday morning near the border with Guyana. The area is known for gang violence. At the Winter Olympic Games, high winds forced the postponement to Thursday of Monday's giant slalom competition. Sunday, 17-year-old American Red Gerard won the men's slopestyle snowboarding competition. In the men's luge, Austria's David Glirscher took gold. In women's ice hockey, both Americans and Canadians advanced. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Monday, February 12th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf wins the Mo Ibrahim Prize for Achievement in African Leadership.
First of all, she kept Liberia peaceful for 12 years. She dealt with a health crisis beyond anything imaginable. And then third, I think the most important contribution was overseeing the successful transition.
Linda Thomas-Greenfield is the former U.S. ambassador to Liberia. Voter registration is underway for Burundi's upcoming controversial constitutional referendum. Tanzania's government reacts to Roman Catholic bishops' criticism. And will today be the day we know the fate of South African President Jacob Zuma?
The expectation is that the ANC National Executive will recall President Zuma from office because he has had discussions with the ANC officials and he has apparently not complied with their request to step down.
Saleh Mapaila is the first Deputy General Secretary of the South African Communist Party. And Kenya's Raila Odinga accuses some foreign diplomats of trying to introduce neocolonialism in Kenya. Those stories, plus Samson Omale Sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has been awarded the 2017 Mo Ibrahim Prize for Achievement in African Leadership. Mrs. Sirleaf, Africa's first elected female president, served two consecutive terms totaling 12 years. In announcing the award on Sunday, the committee praised her exceptional and transformative leadership in the face of unprecedented and renewed challenges. But some Liberians say President Sirleaf has a questionable legacy domestically. Joining us now from Washington is Linda Thomas-Greenfield, former U.S. ambassador to Liberia. Good morning, Madam Ambassador.
Good morning to you.
Such an exciting news about President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and the Mo Ibrahim Award. First of all, your comment.
I was delighted to hear that President Sirleaf was selected. She earned it. She deserved it. And it was just great news.
Part of the criteria here is that, first of all, you must be a former head of state and you must have demonstrated exceptional leadership. What can you point to tell people that she really deserves it?
Well, first of all, she kept Liberia peaceful for 12 years, and that was not an easy thing to accomplish. She dealt with a health crisis beyond anything imaginable, the Ebola crisis. And she was able to bring Liberia out of that major crisis. And then third, I think the most important contribution was overseeing the successful transition for the first time in more than 40 years for Liberia to transition from one elected government to another elected government. And there are very few countries on the continent of Africa who have countries that have gone through the kind of crises Liberia has gone through, who can say that they have accomplished that. And I think all of that is credited to President Sirleaf. I think it's a legacy that Liberians should be extraordinarily proud of.
Ambassador, when you talked about the legacy of President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, how would you describe it? Because if you talk to Liberians in Liberia, they gave you mixed reaction in terms of what should be her legacy.
You know, I think Liberians hold themselves to the highest of standards, and I think sometimes they go overboard. I think they have to acknowledge and accept that President Sirleaf was responsible for maintaining Liberia's peace for the past 12 years. She was responsible for bringing respect back to Liberians. She was able to get a hearing for Liberia in the international community to get debt forgiveness. I don't think anyone who might have served as president of this country could have accomplished that, what she accomplished. And Liberians need to understand that while she was not perfect, she was extraordinarily successful, and they have to give her her due and recognize the legacy that she is leaving behind.
You know, I was speaking to a Liberian just when the news broke, and they said to me, President Sirleaf has a questionable legacy. First of all, people talk about democracy, that she headed the transition to democracy, and she solidified democracy. But then they said, when you look at the way the last election went, they said she left the country in a confused state.
I think she left the country in a much better state than she found the country. And again, I think Liberians are extraordinarily hard on her. They were in an extraordinary downward spiral when she was elected in 2006. They'd gone through more than 14 years of civil war. The children of Liberia had never, most of them had never seen the day where they didn't hear gunfire. And she started the process of bringing Liberia back into the community of democracies. And again, there's still a lot of work to be done. So I'm not saying she left the country in any perfect condition. There's still more work to be done. And she's going to, I think, be remembered for what she accomplished. That said, we all have to come together, all Liberians, to help the new president build on her successes and work to improve where she was unable to succeed.
Linda Thomas-Greenfield is the former U.S. ambassador to Liberia. She was speaking with us from Washington, D.C. The National Executive Committee of South Africa's ruling African National Congress, ANC, will meet again today, Monday, in an emergency session to discuss the fate of President Jacob Zuma. This comes as another meeting of the committee was cancelled as Zuma held more talks with ANC President Cyril Ramaphosa, apparently looking for a dignified way out. Mr. Zuma faces hundreds of corruption allegations. There are reports that Mr. Zuma has laid down a number of conditions for his removal as president of South Africa. Sully Mapaila is first deputy general secretary of the South African Communist Party. He says he expects the ANC National Executive Committee to recall President Zuma from office following today's meeting because Mr. Zuma apparently did not comply with the ANC request to step down.
The expectation is that the ANC National Executive will recall President Zuma from office because he has had discussions with the ANC officials and he has apparently not complied with their request to step down or to resign, which would have been the most dignified way of him leaving office. But he delayed that process.
As you mentioned, another National Executive Council meeting was scheduled and then postponed. What's happening within the ANC? Is President Zuma trying to negotiate his way out?
Well, he had a different interpretation of the discussions between the ANC officials, which is what we call the top six, who were mandated by the National Executive to go and have a discussion with him for him to leave office. Then he misinterpreted that to say that they would discuss with him about the concept of transition, in which case he alluded to the fact that he needed to stay in office until the end of his term. But obviously, given the reputation that he has now acquired, flirting with corrupt individuals like the Gupta family and some others, including people who are in businesses with his son, the ANC could not wait for such a long period right up to 2019. Which would have really compromised the ANC's image because it would have dealt with the value system of the ANC. The ANC is a movement that made the greatest sacrifice for the liberation struggle of South Africa. It's a movement based on an extremely high value system of accountability, of selfless service to the people, of huge sacrifices that each individual cadres make for the common good of the South African public. So his occupation of office had devalued that.
Apparently, listening to you, the ANC is concerned about the coming 2019 election. My understanding is that a court is looking into all these charges that were brought against the president, the so-called corruption charges. A court is again taking a look at them. Let's assume that President Zuma is removed. Is that a safe way out? And then maybe he is prosecuted. That still doesn't help the ANC.
Well, if he's prosecuted, the story will help the ANC in that the ANC would have dealt with someone they deemed to have been inappropriate towards, someone who would have compromised the ANC's own value system. But quite clearly, the idea is not much about the coming elections in 2019. It's much the protection of the ANC's value system and the respect that the ANC has had from the people of South Africa over the years, from within its own alliance components, which includes the Communist Party, the trade union movement, the civic movement, and the progressive mass democratic formations in the various sectors of our society, the progressive NGOs, the youth, student, and women's movement, all those organizations that have always felt represented by the ANC's value system, feel really compromised, and they want an ANC leadership that is upright, that is not corrupt or that cannot be corrupted or that has no perception of being corrupt.
Solly Mapaila is the first Deputy General Secretary of the South African Communist Party. He was speaking with me from Pretoria. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Bott in Washington. Today's Monday, February 12th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Voter registration is underway for Burundi's May controversial referendum to amend the country's 2005 constitution. The parliament made changes to the constitution last October. If the voters approve the referendum, then President Pierre Nkurunziza, in power since 2005, will have a mandate to stay in office for two additional terms beginning 2020. As Moses Havyarimana reports from Bujumbura, opposition members are calling for a free and fair referendum.
Burundians who are above 18 years of age are expected to register themselves in order to vote in the May referendum to change the country's constitution. The National Independent Electoral Commission said that more than 500,000 have already registered themselves countrywide in the last 2 days. Prosper Nahoramie is the spokesman of the National Independent Electoral Commission. He says that voters' registration started very well countrywide and in embassies worldwide, and that there are some cases whereby individuals were arrested for making fraud registrations. He says that the police is already handling the case. Burundi police spokesman Pierre Nkurikiye said that at least 7 people were arrested accused of making the fake registration documents and that investigations have been launched.
Most of them are coming from the Royal Burundi Coalition. For other cases, investigations are going on.
Amizero ya Burundi is a coalition of political parties in Burundi led by Agathon Rwasa, who is also the deputy speaker of the parliament. He said that the ongoing scenario reflects lack of democracy in the country.
I was recruited in politics by the situation in the country, a situation where injustice was prevailing. Till now, injustice is there, torture, looting, the wealth of the country. All of these are just enough motivation for anybody to be in opposition.
Burundi last amended the constitution in 2005 when the incumbent president Pierre Nkurunziza took the office after the transitional government that was led by Domitien Ndayizeye. The draft constitution allows the president to contest for as many terms, but not more than 2 consecutive terms. If the current constitution is amended, the presidential term will be revised from 5 to 7 years, which critics say will keep the incumbent president in the office until 2034. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
A Tanzanian government official says the country under President John Magufuli is enjoying a flourishing democracy, but it seems the country's Roman Catholic bishops see things differently. In a pastoral letter issued on Sunday, the bishops condemned what they say are violations of democratic principles and freedom of expression by President Magufuli's government. They accused the government of suspending until next election political party activities such as public gatherings, marches, and debates, even at the party's own headquarters. The bishops also criticized the government of closing down or temporarily suspending media houses. Harrison Mwakambi is the Tanzanian Minister of Information. He says both the opposition and the bishops are perhaps not too pleased with the government's successful war on corruption.
It's interesting that it comes from the Catholic bishops. I don't know where Catholic bishops in the U.S. or in Africa or in Tanzania, because I have never heard about it. I hear this for the first time from you. Who are these Catholic bishops? Because we haven't heard about that.
These are Catholic bishops in your country.
We haven't been given the opportunity to hear from them unless the issues are assessments to you and not to us. So, well, it will be part of the same opposition stuff we hear around, the rabble-rousing by the opposition. And it will continue as long as, you know, there's democracy here.
What I'm reading to you is in a pastoral letter that the bishops put out on Sunday. Are you associating the church with the opposition?
I don't know. It's freedom. You know, it is freedom. Everybody is free here. You can say anything. But what I'm complaining about is that it has not been given to us. It has not been directed to the government. It has been directed to you. I don't know why. But if the Catholic bishops are serious at resolving whatever they think is a problem here, then let them address such matters to the government.
Here are some of the things they say. Political activities are prohibited by the instrumentalization of the police. The activities of political parties, such as public gatherings, demonstrations, marches, debates inside the premises, which are, they say, are the right of every Tanzanian, have been suspended. Are all these things true, or you're saying they are not true?
Let me assure you, I've heard such kind of remarks in a free, parliament we have, and it's always opposition stuff. It is arousing by the opposition, and that's the order of the day here, which won't stop until they take over government. But I never expected this to come from the Catholic bishops, because our doors are open to them to discuss whatever they think is a hindrance to democracy. But what has happened in Tanzania is that we have taken the war against corruption extremely serious, I think, for the first time since independence. And this is where maybe I can see a lot of opposition coming from.
I must agree with you that reading about Tanzania, they said that since President Magufuli came to power, certain things have gone right in Tanzania in terms of making sure that the corruption you mentioned, that people respect the issue of time in Tanzania. But at the same time, the critics say that the president, in doing all these things, he has become dictatorial.
They're entitled to their opinion, but we think simply a change. We are seeing, different things taking place in this country, and some people are not happy about it. We are seeing for the first time senior government leaders, going to court on corruption charges. Others are businessmen who couldn't be touched, a few years ago, and now in remand prisons, they are waiting the usual court cases. So people cannot speak very positively about such a government, but we believe that our economic independence is also largely based on how much serious we are in fighting corruption and other vices in society.
Harrison Wakembe is Tanzania's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Dar es Salaam. In Kenya, National Super Alliance NASA leader Raila Odinga says recent attempts by 11 foreign envoys to broker a political dialogue as a deliberate attempt to introduce neocolonialism in Kenya. Raila accused the diplomats of hypocrisy. Duncan Kayemba is the senior reporter for KTN News, Kenya's 24-hour news and current affairs channel.
The envoys seem to have told the opposition to first of all recognize them, given that they didn't participate in that election. Then once they recognize them, that is now when they should push for dialogue. But they've been told off by NASA leader Raila Odinga, who told them that they have no business telling Kenyans who their president is. And in his own words, he says Kenyans themselves know who is their president, and therefore Kenya is a sovereign state, adding that Kenyans never dictate to the US who their president is, Kenyans never tell the UK who their prime minister is, and Kenyans don't tell Germany who their chancellor is. And of course, this coming from the fact that the political tension is fever pitch once again, of course, occasioned by the last week's events whereby several of Odinga's foot soldiers were rounded up and some taken to court.
Let's go back to the story of Miguna Miguna, one of the foot soldiers of Mr. Odinga. My understanding is that he's a Kenyan national, but yet the government has deported him, sent him into exile. Is this possible?
Well, that is now the confusion that we're witnessing. Of course, as it stands, the High Court had ordered the Inspector General of Police, the Director of Criminal Investigation, and the Head of Immigration Department to swear affidavits as to why, to give directions or explanations as to why a court order that demanded Miguna be produced in court was ignored, and instead what Kenyans witnessed was Miguna being dragged onto the runway, put on a KLM flight, and sent to Canada. That is the kind of debate that is being elicited. And after Miguna was deported, the government was quick to make a statement by indicating that Miguna, in June 2017, he renewed his Canadian passport, which clearly indicated that he renounced his citizenship.
Duncan Kayame, senior reporter for KTN News, Kenya's 24-hour news and current affairs channel. You're speaking with me from the capital, Nairobi. It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the CAF Champions League preliminary round results played across various venues on the continent this past weekend. On Sunday, 12 first-leg matches were played. Lesotho's Bantu were beaten 4-2 by Swaziland giants Mbabane Swallows at the Sesotho Stadium in Maseru, while Libyan side El Tahadi overcame Ghanaian club Aduana Stars 1-0 at the Petro Sports Stadium in Cairo. In Sétif, Olympic Real de Bangui of Central African Republic were thrumped 6-0 by Algerian giants ES Sétif, while Malian side ES Real Bamako drew 1-1 with Nigerian outfit MFM in Bamako. Congo Brazzaville's AS Otoho stunned Algerian side Moluadia Club de Alger 2-0, while Plateau United thrashed Eden Sports of Cameroon at the New Jersey Stadium 3-0. In Monrovia, LISCR edged out Sudanese giant Al Hilal 1-0, while Benin's Bofill du Bogou drew 1-1 with Ivorian giant Asec Mimosa. Gaia Club of Comoros drew 1-1 with Mozambican side UD Songo in Maroni, while Dia Congo giant AS Vista thrumped Malawian club to forward Wanderers 4-0 at the Stade de Matias in Kinshasa. Elsewhere, Angolan outfit Primeiro de Agosto thrashed Zimbabwean club FC Platinum 3-0 in Luanda. On Saturday, 16 matches were played. The return leg matches will be played in the weekend of February 20th to the 21st, with the 27 aggregate winners advancing into the first round. And now to all the sports. Nigeria have named an 18-player preliminary squad for this month's Group B first leg game in the FIBA Basketball World Cup 2019 African qualifiers in Bamako, Mali. While the former African champions kept five players from last year's FIBA AfroBasket, where they claimed a second-place finish, they added Ben Uzo and Michael Bindiji, two members of the Continental Championship winning team from 2015. A Kenyan-born French runner, Ibrahim Kiprotich, on Saturday emerged new champion at the third Lagos City Marathon. Kiprotich finished ahead of the over 80,000 runners from across the world, posting a new course record of 2 hours, 13 minutes, 4 seconds in the process, winning the grand prize of $50,000. In the female category, it was a clean sweep by Ethiopia as a trio of Alimensha Hapab-Guta, Tigis Grima, and Ayelu Abebe came first, second, and third to win the grand prize of $50,000, $40,000, and $30,000, respectively. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has been awarded the 2017 Mo Ibrahim Prize for Achievement in African Leadership. Mrs. Sirleaf, Africa's first elected female president, served two consecutive terms. In announcing the award on Sunday, the committee praised her exceptional and transformative leadership in the face of what the committee called unprecedented and renewed challenges. And that's it for this Monday, February 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the team, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a productive week.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu, host of Health Chat. Tune in next week on Health Chat for an exclusive interview with Professor Isaac Folorunso, Minister of Health of the Republic of Nigeria, and Dr. Patrick Abuache, Director of the Family Health Division for the Ghana Health Service. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-691-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.